We are.
All over the place.
All stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Commissioner, I'd like to add, we sent out a revised agenda page to include an executive session. So I just want to make sure that that's for the record. There will be an executive session on legal issues.
Okay, do you have a sense of when that would be appropriate to?
It will be right after public comments, kind of between 12 and 13.
Okay.
Should be 15 minutes, Carolyn, I think.
Sure.
With no decision, just an update.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
So moved as amended.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any public comment? Okay, the consent agenda.
And commissioners, to make you aware, there was one last additional electronic form that was added to the agenda. It got in right on the time. So you will find one additional electronic form. And that will be item number 9 on your list of warrants and the final page of the actual copies in your pen packets.
So is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So move.
One second.
One moment, just checking. Second.
Okay. So now we have room for questions, comments, and discussion.
ACH is the building instructor. That's correct. Yeah, so that's the permanent work.
Comments or questions?
We're on the consent agenda still?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I have none.
I have none.
Okay, all in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So, financial report.
Commissioner, what you have in front of you is the February financial report. All in all, is looking very good. Some of the things we talked about last month have corrected themselves, like staffing costs and things. One of the things I wanted to bring to your attention, because it threw me off a bit, because our financials are presented on a cash basis, all of our capital money is coming out of our operating budget. We're transferring it from reserves into operating. So you're seeing $108,000 negative, but basically $115,000 of that $108,000 loss is covered mortgage. So you're going to see that because we didn't account for capital projects actually in the operating budget, you're going to be seeing that throughout the year as we make draws on our budget to compensate that. I talked to our accountants about it, and they said, by the Mars manual, this is how we have to show it. But I just wanted you all to be aware and not be alarmed when you see a number like $121,000 for purchase of capital assets.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if there was some way that you could maybe just a very brief report generate something that showed what the picture would be like, but for the 115, or as we go on up to, you know, the total of the capital expenditures, or at least the covered mortgage. Is that a difficult thing to create?
Actually, this is just my scratch that I have to print out real quick, but I could print out the statement of cash flows, and it has what
And that would equal the $121,000 and change.
But I think what you asked, I mean, get this right, is what would the statement from our accountant look like if we took out the cash flow of capital expenses, which is really doesn't show up as a budget item. It's against nothing budgeted. So I guess we could do the math.
We'll provide that from you. You can look on page 3 and see loss from operations of $122,000, which is basically what we've spent on the capital projects.
Right.
So we would be right on budget should we take that $122,000 out of there.
So is that something that you could prepare on a regular basis for us, the statement of cash flow?
So you'll show the breakdown of the capital cash flow, and then we could you include on that comparison with the Hearthstone for the cash period reporting period, the adjustment would be, and I'm sure we can all add to track, but not as well as you.
I can do that.
Okay,
thank you.
Yeah, good point, George.
Are there any other questions about the budget?
I had one more issue I was going to flag, and I flag it in part because we're going to be dealing with the yacht club lease here a little bit later today. As I read this, the yacht club still hasn't caught up with their rent. They're still paying in arrears rather than in advance as required by the lease. And when we go into the new lease, assuming that's approved today, that again requires in advance, and it increases their security deposit by some $500, $600, something in there. So, number one, I hope the yacht club treasurer is aware of that they're going to get that extra bump. And two, I really am concerned that we not go into a new lease already in technical default, whether we want to call it that or not. And in part, that's because it sets a bad precedent for our other tenants, and I don't want to give any kind of impression that the yacht club gets special treatment that our other tenants would not be equally allowed, and we can't afford to be fronting all of our tenants' rent. So I,
to that, Juanita and I had a meeting this morning, and we have a strategy. I've talked to the yacht club, and she has a strategy of writing letters to them on how we're going to change the way they do their accounting. But it is an important issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. When does the new yacht club lease begin?
The form that I was looking at earlier today called for March 1, so 3 weeks back. So if it's going to be retroactive to March 1, I think the actual amount of the monthly rent doesn't change, but the amount of the deposit, the security deposit, changes, and the that requirement that they be paying in advance instead of in arrears becomes a bigger issue.
Anything else?
Not from me.
One other really picky thing. somebody's got to be that picky uni.
We rely upon you.
We had talked one time about getting the operating expenses in an alphabetical order. That's just a convenience thing of being able to find things faster. And I know that requires reordering what's in the books already, but if you would take another look at that, it would be easier to work with for us old folks.
Yeah, this is generated by our accounting firm, but we will make sure that they understand that they need to do that.
Yeah, I know that when we did our budget, you were able to do that, and that was really handy. Now we could just get Ball and Trigger, or not Ball and Trigger anymore, but Hearthstone Group. On the same page.
Just building on what Juanita is going to do to keep a track of cash, capital projects and cash. We did talk last time about adjusting for the launch ramp project, and so we need a piece of paper that shows the capital projects for the year and how we shuffle them around based on unplanned expenditures like we were going to do. We don't have to do that now, but it's something that would help us see the how do we get the money to do another project that wasn't planned.
So I agree. What we're planning on doing April 1 is a total budget reconciliation. Okay. So you will have a new draft budget April 1 to go over, and they will be redlined as far as what we're doing and how we're changing them, both capital and operating.
Okay.
Anything else?
I'm happy.
I'm ecstatic.
Well, filled with ecstasy. All in favor of approving financial report as presented?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, well, that turns us to our action items. Resolution 03-01-2017 to authorize the LTGO bond. I would like to have the pleasure of introducing Cynthia Weed to anyone who does not already know her.
Hello.
It was really nice to walk in and see your face. So, did you want to start this off?
Sure. As we remember, on February 6th, the commissioners authorized staff to engage Kitsap Bank to provide us $1.2 million bond. For covered mortgage. My first call, obviously, was to Cynthia, who I've worked with before, to prepare those documents for us, to walk us through the process. So really, this is the culmination of all of that work. Cynthia?
For the record, I'm Cynthia Weed, and I'm a partner at K&L Gates. And our role in this transaction is to represent the port in connection with this loan transaction. And so one of your first questions might be, okay, why do we need you? Because we already have a great lawyer, Carolyn Lake. And the answer to that is you probably don't really need me because you have a great lawyer, but the role that we play is a special role just as your bond counsel. That is, when banks lend money or when purchasers lend money to a public agency, they require an opinion from an attorney who specializes in these matters. And that opinion covers two things. One is that the loan is valid and binding and enforceable. And that's important because if as a court, you didn't follow all the rules, statutory rules, and this is to protect taxpayers, if you didn't follow all the rules, the technical rules associated with borrowing money, the loan would be invalid. And even if you wanted to pay it back, you couldn't pay it back. So that scares banks and lenders. They really want an opinion that the loan is valid and enforceable. And the second part of the opinion is that the interest on the loan is tax exempt. So that means when the bank lends you the money, when they get the interest income coming back to them, they don't pay federal income tax on it. So it's an attractive loan for a bank. It's attractive for two reasons. Number one, it's tax exempt, and number two, your credit is stellar. So once they know they have a valid binding enforceable obligation, it's one of the best loans they have in the bank with this tax exempt interest. So again, this is where we're dealing with this as a bond, but that's because of state law. That is, when you borrow money and give them a financial instrument, if it's a long-term obligation, we refer to it as a bond. If it's a short-term obligation, we refer to it as a note. And this is a combination of both. That is, you're borrowing money for your mortgage project, replacing the covered mortgage, and what you're, this loan is going to be structured as a drawdown loan for the first 12 months, up to 12 months or until you get it done. And then it will convert over to a long-term amortizing loan. So you have a line of credit all set up, or will be set up, at Kitsap Bank. And you'll be able to draw as soon as we deliver all the paperwork, you'll be able to draw on the loan. And you will draw on that loan by completing a form that's in the back of this resolution, Exhibit B. That form will be completed, And you'll be coordinating, you'll coordinate making sure the county treasurer knows that you're going to be receiving the money. The form goes to the bank, and the bank will in turn wire the money into the county treasurer. So, and minimum draws on the loan are $100,000, but you can go over that. And so you'll probably, as your monthly invoices come in, put together your draw request, get the money into the bank into your account. It's the, which is another one of your resolutions, is you already had a construction fund, and she didn't want me to call it a project fund. She wants you to have this be this construction fund. So the money will then go into the account at your county treasurer. You can reinvest that money. You won't get much interest. It's pretty low right now. But you'll probably shortly thereafter use it to disperse and pay out your contractors. During the term of this draw period, interest is payable quarterly. And that was a decision that the bank and Jim agreed upon. So you'll pay interest quarterly. And the rate on that is 2.5%. At the end of the draw period, as soon as you're done, you'll notify the bank, it's all done. Then that outstanding principal balance is going to be re-amortized into a amortizing loan that will pay out over 15 years, and you'll have semi-annual payments, June and December. So instead of quarterly payments, it'll be semi-annual. Now, the formula, and that's the reason I went and got the phone, I should have asked Alan Crane, but the way I did the math, I went on to Thomson Reuters, and the way I'm seeing this, I believe it's 2.81% plus 75 basis points. So I think the rate, I didn't reconfirm this with Alan, because I'm not the mathematician, I think the rate's going to be 3.56, or so that's going to be your 15-year rate. That'll be a lockdown for 15 years. So, and interestingly enough, now you'll flip when that repayment period, when those interest and principal payments, the Kitsap County Treasurer did not want to make the payments directly to, or the Kitsap Treasurer did not want to make the payments directly to the bank. Instead, they want to route it to U.S. Bank, who is the state fiscal agent, who in turn will route it back to Kitsap Bank. Now, I think that's going to be, U.S. Bank is easily going to do this. I think it's going to end up, I talked to Becky Stack, I said, "You sure this is what you want to do?" I think she may decide this is just more complicated than it needs to be, and they could just route the money directly from the Kitsap County Treasurer over to Kitsap Bank, as opposed to sending it back to Minneapolis and routing it back to Seattle. But that's the overall process. So there's a reference in here to bond registrar, and the bond registrar, who is going to be the paying agent for the bond, is the state fiscal agent, who is currently U.S. Bank. And they're good people, easy to work with, and so I'm sure they'll all communicate. And I'm be having conversations, I think, with the Kitsap County Treasurer and U.S. Bank to make sure that the amortization schedule is all where it needs to be, so that the back rooms know how the payments are supposed to be. But as soon as you're done with your draw period, then you'll know exactly what your amortization installments are, the overall amortization installments are. So this resolution authorizes the interim draw period, authorizes the interest rate, provides for a form of the actual bond. That's the single-spaced piece of this. We pull this out and we turn that into the actual bond that is going to be delivered to Kitsap Bank. And our plan is to get this done. I think they've worked it out. The date that we put in here is 31st day of March. So we expect to close it on March 31st. That date seemed to work for Becky Stack. And then once it's closed and delivered, you'll be authorized to draw money anytime thereafter. Again, up to, you know, periodic drawings up to $1.2 million. There's reference in here to federal tax law, and that's because federal tax law guides the kind of loans. Your loan is either tax-exempt governmental, or tax-exempt private activity, or taxable. So ports have a complex borrowing authority. But because this is mortgage and because it's basically open and you have a rate schedule, there's no private activity use going on with that mortgage, And so effectively it should be tax exempt governmental, which gives you the lowest rate. You do promise to abide by federal tax rules. However, it should be pretty straightforward. Unless your marina, all of a sudden you either sell your marina or turn over management of the arena to a private operator, it should be governmental for the full life of the issue. So even though we have a policy, a tax compliance policy, unless something, I would say, quite extraordinary happens in terms of operations, you really should have nothing to worry about with respect to the private use of the facility. And secondly, even though the word arbitrage rebate is used here, you should not actually have to pay any arbitrage rebate for two reasons. One, the loan is less, you're not going to borrow more than $5 million this year, and it's governmental. And secondly, even though you're borrowing at 2.5%, you're likely not going to earn more than 2.5%. And so since you're not earning more than your borrowing rate, you get to keep it all, whatever it is. You get to keep whatever the interest earnings are on the draws. And so, as I've mentioned before, I love to talk about bonds way more than most people like to hear me talk about bonds. So I would entertain any questions, and I do mean entertain. But if you have any, I'd be glad to answer to the best of my ability. Otherwise, I won't be insulted if you don't have any questions. And I do have all of the paperwork here, all the closing documents that we can get and assemble so we can be ready for the closings, because then we won't have another meeting before March 31st.
Questions?
I have only, well, I guess two questions.
Okay.
One, you'll be around for Jim when he has questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In one of his outbuildings, he's cleaning it up for him.
He's building a new
building.
Got
a vacation property. He's got a property here. There's going to be a ferry coming over here. And it's like, yeah, I can even come out and personally answer questions. So, yes.
But the other one, and it's really kind of minor, and it's more for my own edification, anything else. I'm used to a world where debts are either secured or unsecured. You know, secured being that there's a piece of collateral, like my house secures a bank loan or my car secures a bank loan. Is this secured or unsecured?
No, but it's better than a secured loan. Well, now there's a lot of controversy about that, so I'll try to keep my, I love to talk about this, I'll try to keep it brief, but for government entities, like the port and the city and the town, your taxpayers are protected. You're not really authorized to mortgage your property. You can't mortgage your property. There's an obscure section, which I try never to show anybody in Title 53, that has some limited capacity to mortgage property. But and I've been doing this a while, no port has ever used that statute to actually mortgage facilities. So you can't actually put a mortgage on your facilities, but you have the authority to do two types of loans. One is a general obligation, which means that it's a full faith and credit of the port that's being pledged to pay it back, which means your tax levy, whatever your available tax levy is committed to actually pay the debt service. It's not secured by any asset, but as far as Kitsap Bank is concerned, they've got the tax base of the Port of Kingston. All the taxpayers' property is really ultimately encumbered to pay the debt service on this loan. And except for levy limits, there's even an unlimited tax that's authorized to pay the debt service on this loan. So except for the fact that you have levy limits in place, before 1986, before levy limits came in, you know, the 6% and all that, had an unlimited tax authority to pay debt service. So very strong credit. It may not be secured, but it's probably more secure than almost any corporate credit you could think of. Now, the other type of loan that you have is a revenue-based loan. That is, if you a revenue-based loan.
Okay.
That is, you would borrow money and you pledge only a particular stream of revenue. So if you had a tenant and you just put up a building for the purpose of handling that particular tenant, or frankly, even the mortgage, and you said, all I'm going to pay you out of is just mortgage revenue, or I'm just going to pay you out of rental revenue. That's a revenue-based loan. And in that case, you actually get a statutory lien on the revenues. Once you pledge the revenues, there's a statutory lien. You don't have a UCC filing, there's no mortgage, but you are a secured lender because you have a security interest in the revenues themselves. And so then the strength of that credit is only as strong as the revenues pledged. So most ports are borrowing based on the general obligation credit, but if you have a strong source of revenues, you could also do a revenue-based loan. Now, historically, I always thought the GO pledge was stronger than the revenue pledge, but some bankruptcy filings have been happening in Detroit and in Alabama that have indicated that the water sewer utilities, those revenues, they weren't dischargeable in bankruptcy. So essentially, as a secured lender, if the port were to be bankrupt, someone would say a bankruptcy court, because they do whatever they want, they can cram down the GO bond holders. So it's been a little bit of an upside down in my world or our world in terms of whether or not that secured loan is stronger than a tax-based loan. But I still think for the Port of Kingston, the GO pledge is as good as it gets. I think that. So it may be unsecured, but it's pretty secure.
I'm not worried about us going into bankruptcy. It's just one of those things. I like to understand from the big picture where we are in terms of what kind of animal we've created.
Yeah, there's no mortgage on your mortgage, and there wouldn't be any authority. Even that obscure section wouldn't permit you to mortgage that mortgage facility. So, and that's, again, to protect the public. That is, the public assets remain in public ownership.
Right.
And that's so you have the ability to pay it back, but you basically keep public assets in public ownership. You can't mortgage the courthouse.
So we haven't truly mortgaged our stream of income either, or put a lien on it. But
no,
we
there's
have
no
pledged.
You've pledged all your full faith and credit. So fundamentally, it's all of your assets. Not assets, meaning all of your ability to raise revenue, and that includes your tax base. But it's a different type of credit analysis than what you have in the corporate sector. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of banks who get into this, it's always like, where's my mortgage? So it takes an experienced banker like Alan Crane to go, oh, I like that. That's good. I understand that. And that, in part, is why you end up having to do all this paperwork. Because if you go to the bank and borrow money, they pull out their Laser Pro documents. And those Laser Pro documents just don't fit with public credit. You know, you just can't sign those. You just can't sign those. So we just have to do some separate paperwork.
I have two questions.
Oh, good.
One is a follow-on to Bruce's, and the other is more administrative. At some point, I thought we had to have a capital reserve, maintain a capital reserve while we had this bond. In fact, is that not true?
It's not. It's certainly not a legal requirement, and particularly for a general obligation credit like this, because Alan is not really looking at the, except in the bigger picture, the revenues of the mortgage. And so he's really looking at your tax base and your overall financial operations. So that wouldn't be required typically in a general obligation. As a matter of fact, under tax law, you really rarely, so you're not necessarily permitted to have these reserves, because they view them as sinking funds and they don't like that. Like, if you got that capital reserve, you should use it to pay.
Sure.
So you should be, instead of borrowing money, but we're not going there. Okay. So, but in a revenue-based transaction where there's only revenues and where you might see revenue fluctuations like this, then lenders will typically ask for debt service reserves and capital reserves and repair reserves, because they want to make sure that there's enough revenue to continue to cover things and keep this facility operating.
But that's not here.
The
other thing is that, as looking through it, it looked like we had to maintain or create an administrative record reporting requirement for all that goes ins and goes outs. Is that a separate from our regular financial reports?
No,
our regular
it's just
reporting?
Your regular financial.
It's just the regular stuff, because there's some words that you will keep track of the expenses and all that specifically related to the project.
Well,
there's something in there, and I don't want to get into it.
What you want to do is be able to, on the off chance that the IRS were to come in and audit you, you want to be able to show them with your books and records how you spent the money, because you're supposed to use this money for that capital asset. You're not borrowing this money just to go out and take trips. It's really being borrowed for this project. So an IRS agent, and maybe mercifully there aren't as many as they used to be because their budgets have been cut, who would come out and audit you and say, can you show me how you spent the money? Can you show me where those assets are? But you have to, the bank will want financial statements from time to time. They will want to see your annual financial statements.
Yeah, it was something like records of expenditures, timing of expenditures, object code, proceeds of securities, and all that was in the document. I just cut and pasted it, but that's item B there. So I'm not asking you how to do it.
Oh,
just make sure the staff knows that.
This, if you had to pay arbitrage rebate,
yeah,
then that
okay,
would
so
be...
Okay, so that didn't apply.
Ignore it.
Okay, good.
Ignore
the other it. Thing was that I think it put records retention requirements for, like, we might have 200 leaseholders or rental people, and there's a requirement to maintain those records for 3 years. Is that...
Yes, actually... The
so there's some different record requirements.
If you have leased out the... if you actually... Well, those are just little operating leases. In other words...
That's not what we mean here. I'm sorry, finish your sentence.
Oh, no. I mean, if you have some other types of leases just for...
Yeah. Well, just each person has a month-to-month
lease. Right, you have these month-to-month leases.
Yeah.
Ignore that.
Okay. So we
ignore
don't have
the month-to-month. If okay. you had, basically, if, now, here would be an issue. If the federal government came in and said, I'm putting a fleet in there, and I want a five-year commitment from you that I can have my fleet at that, on those spaces, that would be an issue. You would want to call me up right away, because that's bad. That's bad. And so you would want to call me up if the federal government came in and said, I'm taking over your space, and I'm going to lease it for 5 years. But these month-to-month stuff, ignore
right.
that.
So it doesn't seem like there's any significant administrative burden other than keeping records for the project.
Keeping
and
records
you can
for
tell
the project.
Staff
yeah.
what,
if
what
if
you,
you and again that just, again this the lease of spaces that you have with your 10-year waiting period. So I won't be leasing space here anytime soon. Is basically month-to-month, and those are just people can come, they can go. But they mostly, I know, never go. But basically, they're just month to month. It's not a what I call a long-term lease. We say anything longer than 30 days. I mean, if it was somebody comes in and takes long-term space, particularly if it's commercial, if it's either commercial or federal, like commercial fishermen or something like that, and they had a long-term lease, like an annual lease or something like that, then those are the leases that you have to keep. And it's not just 3 years, unfortunately. If you had those, you're supposed to keep them for the life of the bond issue plus 3 years.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was wondering if there was a new records requirement.
No.
Sounds like it's not going to occur in the current use of our facilities.
No, no. Yeah. And the chances of an IRS agent showing up, although this would be an attractive, I mean, there is an IRS agent who used to, well, did live in the Seattle area, Seattle, Tacoma, and you just waited for summertime, and sometimes he'd go up to Alaska, and sometimes he'd just go out to nice places and go do an audit. And so, but I haven't seen him. I think Tom Huffmeister retired by now, so I haven't seen him in a while.
A couple of quick follow-ups on, if you're, is that all you had for
That's me? All I had.
When you talk about, you know, commercial uses, we have a lot of commercial fishermen that use the facility, but what you're talking about in terms of enhanced record keeping would be if they were renting a slip under the covered mortgage.
If they had a special deal under the covered mortgage. In other words, you're spending the money on that covered mortgage. So if somebody comes in and gets a special deal, not just your standard, this is my rate. I mean, if you're at Fisherman's Terminal, for example, in Seattle, yeah, it's commercial fishermen there, but you know they pay the standard going rate. So if it's open to anybody at that rate, that's okay. But if you cut a special deal with a particular customer that, you know, I've really got a long-term lease for you, then that's
Which
basically...
Which is a really good reason why we can't give anybody that might ask special rates.
Protect your tax exemption.
Second question.
Just blame Cynthia. Just blame Cynthia.
Yeah, lawyer says we can't do it. Are there any enhanced, we get audited by the state, of course, every other year for 2 years. Any enhanced burden that we're going to experience in those audits for staff?
No. Every so often they'll have a brand new auditor who asks odd questions. But I haven't had an odd question from a brand new auditor on something like this in years. These are pretty straightforward kind of things. So for the most part, they'll look at it and go, oh, okay. But I haven't had a state auditor question. Again, you'll get your state auditors, and sometimes they're new, and with all due respect, they just don't know what they're doing because they've got to go through stuff. But I have not in absolutely years had any questions from a state auditor on anything like this.
Good.
Revenue bonds, occasionally they get confused about reserves and investments of reserves and things like that, where they'll be asking questions about that. But on a general obligation bond, because there's no cash, there's no lump sum of cash sitting anywhere, so there's nothing that they really feel like they have to chase after or account for. You get the money in, you spend it. When the debt service comes due, county treasurer pulls it out of your account and sends it off. So there's no cash sitting around for any extended period of time.
Good.
So Cynthia, those documents, do you file those? Where do I file those?
You're talking about this?
Yeah.
I'm going to have you sign them, and then I take them all, except for the one. There's three. What I have are three copies of the resolution, and you can have one or two, and then I take them back with me, and they're all color-coded for signature. We can do this. You could do this right now, or you can do it later, and then everything comes back to me, except for one copy of the resolution that you keep for yourself. And again, everything's all color-coded. I even brought my notary seal, but frankly, if you're not going to necessarily need to stop, I can notarize it after you send it back to me. But yeah, I have all the documentation's right here. And then when you're all done, we'll send you a thumb drive or a book that has everything in it, so that'll be your transcript. So if the state auditor comes, you'll have something to hand the state auditor, so you want to audit this bond issue. You just, here, put the thumb drive in your computer, or look at the book and turn the pages. Okay. Are you planning, someone said you're not really planning a drawing on March 31st, are you?
No, we don't need to.
So that means we'll get two opinions. There's one opinion that we give on March 31st that says the bond is valid, binding, and enforceable. And then once you make your first draw, then the bank gets a second opinion about tax exemption, because that's when the bond goes live for federal tax purposes.
I think we'll probably opt to sign those after.
Sure.
And then I'll send them to you.
Sure.
Okay.
Again, all color-coded. These even have names on. Jim, Walt, Bruce, Mary. These are color-coded. And on this one, the secretary is yellow and the president is green. So everything is color-coded for signature. You will want to make a motion to adopt the resolution.
Yes.
For the record. Oh, okay. Okay.
I didn't know what color we each are.
On this, unfortunately, this yellow and green is basically secretary and president. There. Here, you're signing all the green, Bruce is red, Walt is yellow, and Jim is blue. But the names are written right there. So. But I'll be glad to stick around and help if you want.
Thank you.
Okay.
We need a motion.
So we need a motion to approve Resolution 03-01-2017 to authorize the LTGO bond. Is that correct?
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That takes us to.
If you're going to sign them here and then send them back to me, I'll notarize them, or you can have someone else notarize them. I'll notarize your signatures with the understanding that I won't actually see your driver's license, but I believe I know you, and so I believe that I will be fine notarizing your signatures, and that you will honestly be the president and secretary signing them. So I again, will not ask to see your driver's licenses, but I just to say for formality, I feel very comfortable that I know you and am able to notarize those signatures, even if you're not signing right in front of me. So just that was the one thing.
Okay.
It's a formality, but it is, I have every expectation that you are the people you say you are.
I think so.
I take the fifth.
No alternative facts here.
So the next thing is to adopt the post-issuance compliance policy for UGO bonds.
So Cynthia, if you could, we're only going to adopt this by motion. We don't have a resolution on it. If you could explain to the commission a little bit about why these policies need to be in place.
Sure. Again, I'll try to keep this brief. About 2 years ago, the Internal Revenue Service, they have a manual called the Internal Revenue Manual, IRM, and they put an announcement in the manual that they would look kindly or kindlier on entities that actually had written policies and procedures regarding compliance with federal tax laws. And then they asked the question on a form that we have to file. That is a form 8038. They've asked the question that says, do you have written policies and procedures? So issuers got a little nervous. If I said no, oh my goodness, that means they're going to audit me. They tried to say no, that doesn't increase your audit risk. But we started to ask for and say it's a good idea to have these written policies and procedures. Because they said, what if you actually did something wrong and you forgot to call me and then somebody discovers it 2 or 3 years later? When you go back in and say, please forgive me to the IRS, they have penalties. They will charge penalties and interest. And so that original IRM said, if you have policies and procedures, we'll waive the penalties. And so that said, this is just a good little extra insurance policy. Again, for your transaction, this is an abundance of caution. So it is not, and now they kind of backed off because they said, you know, we really had no legal authority to actually tell you you had to do this. So they've kind of backed off and said, we're no longer requiring that you do this or announce it. But for the better part of caution, we say it's a good idea. It's a format that essentially wouldn't necessarily have to be adopted by the commission. But, you know, for the better part of this, since you're not going to be doing this regularly. Unfortunately, I won't be coming out here every 6 months to do a bond issue for you. It's probably good if everybody's kind of aware of this and has some awareness of it. So we would be thinking, as a whole, we think it's a good idea that you adopt these policies and procedures. And they're, again, pretty straightforward. It's the same format that we use for pretty much everybody for governmental bonds. And you only have to approve it by resolution, and you don't have to post it on a bulletin board or put it on your website or anything like that.
And where references bond counsel, it says the director will consult with the bond counsel, blah, 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 that's you.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's what we've been doing. And
that is in the tablets somewhere.
I think this is where I saw item 5. I hate to be pedantic here, but Section 5 related back to Paragraph B, which seemed unrelated to arbitrage. So it sounded like we had to keep those records regardless of
their records have nothing per se. I mean, they connect to arbitrage for some purposes,
yeah,
but they also connect to the use of the facility.
So this stuff we have to keep for the duration of the what's on paragraph 5 here, page 4.
Yes, that is for the life of the bond issue and
3 years. Okay, so we do have a burden to be aware of.
The records of your expenditures, correct.
This is transcript, arbitrary, blah, blah, blah. And you get a whole list of work papers and all that sort of stuff.
The transcript, you don't have to worry about arbitrage rebate.
Right.
Ignore that. You don't have to worry about rebate consultants because you won't have any. The records, the biggest thing is probably just your records of expenditures. And however you keep that. And then these leases and use agreements, and again, for longer than 30 days.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what you keep for the life of the bond issue.
So that's just an addition to the standard record requirements that we get from the state auditor, we just have to be aware of. several generations after Jim is our director. They don't throw those things out.
The likelihood of an audit on a bank transaction like this is extremely low. So probably even if you lost it and the resolution says we're using it for the covered mortgage, they could walk out and see, yeah, that's what we spent the money on. Yep. It's really nice to have this, but I have to admit that they have tended to be a little forgiving for smaller issues. I was lucky up in La Conner that they had all these records literally out back in a warehouse, showed how they built a school in 1991. But, you know, for a lot of entities, your records, the technology changes so much, it's really hard to find those things. Mm-hmm. So, for the most part, the service has been relatively forgiving.
Okay.
So, number six under five. So, it's 5B6.
5B6, yes.
The top page.
Those are those 61. Leases, right?
Right, and so if we wanted to install cell phone towers or broadband,
that would be private use. Well, now, no, I'm thinking about whether or not you leased out some type of solar panels or something, but cell phone towers, again, if cell phone towers came and leased out, then they would attach themselves, right? Not that I know of the technology. But that is for less than 10% of the space of the covered mortgage. So anything that's for less than 10% of the space, you know, again, is not going to adversely affect your tax-exempt status. However, I would keep copies of those leases because those would be records of what leases you had to lease out to a Verizon or AT&T. Because that's private use. They're using your space for their private purposes. Mm-hmm.
It seems like the operative word is greater than 30 days in paragraph 6. Yes. If it's a lease for more than 30 days, then it trips a gate there.
Yep.
And certainly our slips don't, even though, you know, they're not commercial.
Then they probably stay there forever, but they're basically 30 days.
It's a 30 days, month. So.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about record keeping. Think about the parking garage at SeatDeck. So, now that's real record keeping they have to have.
Even 30 days?
They have a lot of those deals.
Really?
With big, you know, like Boeing and things like that. And then it moves around. It used to be rail car companies. And so
we go back to Mary's question about the cell phone tower. We can let somebody enter into a longer term lease to put up their cell phone tower. But since it's such a small amount, it's just
space.
A minimus.
The small amount of space,
right.
Well, it's not that small, but the small amount of space that it takes, it doesn't using more than 10% of all of your facility.
So it means
it's so minor that it won't adversely affect your tax exempt status. You should keep copies of those leases just to show for audit purposes, but it's not a problem. It's not a tax problem.
Okay.
Clarify just so that I understand for the records retention purposes. Uh-huh. Really, so that is 10% of. So we're financing this bond is for the repair of the covered mortgage roof system. The 10% of the space as it applies for the tax exemption status, is that 10% of the subject project, or is that the entire property as far as port assets are concerned?
The records retention is you keep all the records,
regardless
of whether it's 10% or not. But you think about the actual space that you use the money for this covered mortgage.
Right.
So what you're doing is talking about whatever is the space under the covered mortgage. Whatever this one, and that's a total. So basically you'd be looking at the space underneath the covers.
Right.
Because the covered mortgage covers the covers cover the mortgage. So even though you're not financing the boats or the piers, you're basically looking at the cover as all the things that are housed underneath there. And so any lease of use of that space underneath those covers, you keep those records. But as long as if you had some use, whether it was the cell phone tower on top or whether or not it was somebody having a special deal underneath for mortgage, you keep those records, but as long as it overall is less than 10%, you're good.
Well, I'm hearing two things. And let me get this right. One is the tax person doesn't care if it's less than 10%. So it's never going to be a tax issue. The other thing is we're signing a procedure here that says we're going
to
keep the records.
You have to
and
keep
even
the
though
record.
It's not relevant to the tax, you know, the auditor will never...
That's how you prove to the auditor that you don't have a problem, that it's less than 10%.
Right. And we're keeping these records to keep these records. And the 10% audit thing is... criteria the auditor will use.
Yes, yeah. When he comes back and looks, or he or she comes back and looks at these, they'll say, over time, did more than 10% of your space get used for private? It's a life of the bond issue thing. So we have some facilities, for example, at the Port of Seattle where they had bad use for the first 3 years, but then they had to go clean for the whole life of the rest of the bond issue to even out that 10%. Okay.
And it gets judged at the end of the bond, life of the bond, or question.
Well, it gets judged when you're audited, but essentially, again, let's say I got a bond issue that's got some sort of bad use up front. If I can demonstrate to the auditor that I haven't tripped over it because I still have time for the rest of the bond issue to even out, to have good use, then they won't make a finding on your bond issue.
Again, problems I don't think we'll run into.
You
sort
are
of
not going
to
run into
some
problems.
Of the tripwires are out there.
And I would love to come back here and have a quiz. No, you really shouldn't have a problem there. I mean, there are certain types of facilities, convention centers, and frankly, port facilities, more than most other facilities, have issues. If you're a school, if you're basically a grade school, you're not going to have any problem. You know, even if you rent out your auditorium on Sundays to a church, it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's basically facilities that are capable of being used for private persons.
There's another reason to do this. If we say we're doing it, then anyone can say, we want to see these records. And they expect that if we say, sign up to keep these records, the records are there. Even though it may not be a tax person, it could be anyone. So we need to follow the letter of the law here in our records retention.
Yeah, the public records, they can pretty much see anything they want.
Yeah.
Almost.
But we need to retain them. Yeah. Yeah, not intentionally not retain them. That's
And that basically is just for federal tax purposes, is reciting only what is actually required to meet audit requirements. So it's not like we're creating some new standard that wouldn't otherwise be required.
Sure. But there are other things. A competitive contractor could say, I want to see all this stuff, and you say you're keeping it, you know, so there could be other people who have an interest other than IRS.
That's true.
Hopefully not, but you never know.
It's true.
So if there's no more questions, then we should...
Is there any reason... that we should not adopt the policy? Is there a reason to not adopt a policy like that?
I've heard at several meetings of attorneys that have said, and this is mostly in Oregon, have said, well, I've got these smaller issues, and what if they adopt these procedures and then they absolutely never do anything? I mean, they actually do the opposite, and they do the opposite. Kind of worried that they'll be in a worse situation than just pleading ignorance from the start and it's a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical that says, you know, are you going to be worse shape if the IRS comes in and says, yeah, you've got these procedures, and then you affirmatively fail to follow those procedures? I hear the argument. And so that's why I've seen that a lot of the issues in Oregon go, no, we just told people not to do it because it's better to plead ignorance than to actually adopt the procedures and then not actually follow them. I'm not sure that's right. I'm just saying that's a point of view that I've heard expressed. You could ask Carolyn on that regard. Is it better to never have any procedures and just blatantly go out and do what you want to do?
The compliance part is having the policy in place is great. Because we know they're going to follow.
This well, group? Absolutely.
The issue tends to be that 18 years from now, that can get lost in the mist of time, and nobody remembers that this policy even exists. And I'm sure if we went 18 years back, there's probably stuff board said they were going to do, but, you know, yeah.
Audit, I'll tell you, here's just the reality, is audit risk is generally ends after about the sixth year out. Because they have a cycle as to when they pull these audits. So they, for example, if they would never audit a 2001 bond issue, but they might be in the cycle of auditing 2011 right now. And so they almost, unless there's some weird thing going on, they never audit you right after you're issued, unless you're a target. By the time they get around to pulling the number, they're about 4 or 5 years out, and then they just move on. So
unless this is in the auditor's records retention thing, we probably need to have a little something that reminds your successors that we have this obligation.
We have a policy. We're going to adopt a policy for that successor.
Sam is young. She'll
she's going to be here for at least 30 years.
I hear what you're saying. I'm just thinking in our record retention, however you ever describe that. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a good point. Adopt a policy.
Okay.
I move we adopt the post-issuance compliance policy for government bonds.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Great, thank you. Wow.
Can I get CLE credit for this?
Oh, I don't need it.
We're going to do one of these at the WPPA Spring Conference. Finance and taxation. 3 hours.
This is a sneak preview?
3 hours. No, I won't be the only one talking, thank God.
So, item 7C, which is also related to the GEO bond, is that something that you might have some comment on as well, Cynthia?
This is our county treasurer requiring us to restructure our bonds because in their records we have two bonds. They've been paid off. We have an 85 issue and an 84 issue. They've both been paid off. And just for clarity, the treasurer wanted us to reorganize those into one construction bond.
Okay, so is there a motion to approve this resolution number 0302-2017 to restructure port bond funds?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? Jim, do you have other?
I don't really understand. I mean, I can understand restructuring, but, you know, 15 years afterwards, I'm not sure I understand even how you would do that.
It's the county treasurer.
So we just do it with the county. We don't have to go back to
the
ish bond issuing and the agency. Yep. You know, keep them happy.
I know. It's just the county treasurer.
You're closest to the microphone.
Okay. I said that with a lot of respect. I mean, they have their records. They have their records. They have their procedures. You just follow their records and procedures, and that's good.
Sure.
And actually,
I can understand.
I'm not saying it just for that. Actually, the Kitsap, I mean, there's... The personalities of county treasurers range all over the place in the state. And actually, the Kitsap County Treasurer is among the better county treasurers out there, quite frankly.
Who knows? They may want to see the records. So make it easier to find.
I'm not going to name names over who the really odd ones are, but this county treasurer is much easier to work with than many.
So is there any challenge with doing this? Structurally. Any other questions about this discussion? So, seeing no further discussion, call for the resolution. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So, that takes us to our next global topic, which is the question of the contract for communications for potential court district expansion. Jim, you want to talk about that?
So we've talked on a few meetings about needing a communication expert to come in and really put together you know, our ideas of how we want to move forward, or do we want to move forward on this. So Windbridge Solutions is a company I've worked with before. They've done this kind of work on numerous occasions. They charge $75 an hour. He's outlined for you 9 items that he would like to propose doing. It is an hourly contract, not to exceed $10,000. So this is something I would do a professional services or personal services contract for with your approval.
My only question so far on it is, you know, not seeing an actual contract or written agreement. I want to make sure we're in a situation where if 2 months from now we've had discussions with interested parties and we decide this just is not going to fly, we want to, you know, cut it off at where it is, whether it's at $2,000 or $5,000, that there's, we have the ability to cut the cost and cut the agreement at any time.
And then, Jim, I should have called you on this earlier, but one thing that I would want to do is to look really closely with the language of the contract as well as the mission defined in the contract, given the PDC's current scrutiny of anything to do with ballot initiatives. And, of course, even though this is far from, you know, matter okay. coming before,
let's work together on that contract. We can bring back to you.
So that would make sure they take no action that could compromise the requirement that we don't advocate for a ballot
election. Correct.
Right. That be in the contract so they don't do anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, I'm at the PDC tomorrow on a charge brought of using public facilities for campaign purposes. Fortunately, the staff is going to recommend no enforcement action, but the AG may choose to disregard the PDC's recommendations. They're just, it's a hot issue right now.
I'll give you a call and see if we can grab the contract for the commissioners to review.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great. Great. So, is there a motion to approve?
I think we're going to table that.
Okay, so we'll table it.
Well, okay. Until we get an actual agreement to review.
Well, we could authorize it pending or review. Do you think you'll need to do this before we meet again to take action?
Well, we can always call a special meeting.
Okay.
On Tuesday
okay.
morning.
Sure. Whatever works.
Okay. We'll table that at this time. And actually, I think your question, Bruce, about whether or not it's possible to stop, we did talk about, I think, in one of our Tuesday morning meetings, because that was my exact concern.
Yeah.
We were committed to the entire thing. So. Okay. Item E, the master plan revisions.
So this is very simple. We've given you the first chapter of the master plan. This was the master plan done in 2012. Just in case you don't have a copy of it, so we're going to take it chapter by chapter. Just go through this. Obviously, we're changing the commissioner's names to protect the nation. But just give me your ideas of any structural changes you'd like to see and how we follow up with the beginning preface of the master plan. And then every meeting we'll bring back another chapter for you, and then hopefully by the end of the year we'll have something we can put together in a package that we've all worked on. So I really have to do.
Yeah, I looked it over, and I kind of had more technical nits, obviously changing the dates, but I can pass them on to you. They're more, we're no longer doing it this way, and this is not per the RCW, that type of stuff. And I can just email you that. Is that okay?
That's exactly what we want.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
What's your timeline for wanting to, are you going this back to you over the course of the next few weeks, and then at our next regular meeting in April, we have the
yes.
next section?
Right. Every month we'll get another section, and so it'd be nice to have the review edits to this by the next meeting.
I think it would be helpful to get the other sections, the sections that deal with what are we going to do when, to kind of do that at a working session. Because there may be some more discussion. This stuff is kind of boilerplate. But when we get into projects, and that's kind of beyond the scope typically of a regular meeting. So we should probably talk about that. Yeah.
So when you say by the next meeting, you mean the next regular meeting.
Right.
But we should anticipate that over the course of this whole project, we're going to be working using the work sessions to...
Well, particularly the ones that require
some of the more meaty sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
Great. Okay. So that doesn't require any kind of action. So, approval of the Kingston Cove Yacht Club lease.
So I've been working with Kingston Cove Yacht Club for a few months now. We've come up with a draft. I've given you all the draft for review. Commissioner McIntyre has given me his input. I think we have a good lease. It allows the yacht club some assurance that they're going to be there for 10 years if they do, which we so desire. The Yacht Club board has approved this, and the Yacht Club membership have approved this. We are now waiting for concurrence from the commission before we can execute.
So this is for discussion only, but it sounds like you want approval.
I'm ready for approval if you are ready for approval.
We're ready.
It seemed to me that you, when I read it over, you incorporated pretty much what we had discussed before. So are there any exceptions or changes from our prior discussion?
Not at all.
Okay.
I did check with Endurus just to make sure of your concern. And their comment is our tenant is Kingston Cove Yacht Club, and they are holding us harmless agreement. So they would be the person, if they were to rent it to someone who destroyed the building, it would be on their insurance company.
Okay. And then we are additionally insured, as I recall. Yeah, so that covers the liability concern. Thank you.
So is there a motion to approve this, or you have? It looks like
just
going to
do
questions.
That. I move that we approve the Kingston Cove Yacht Club lease as presented and authorize the executive director to sign the lease on behalf of the board.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so the next issue is support policy updates, support conduct and business.
So we talked at one of our commissioner conversations about going through the list of projects we had for the coming year, and to look at some of the low-hanging fruit. And so there are three or four policies like this that are low-hanging fruit that we just want to get and move forward. Mm-hmm. This is the first of them. I got great comments from all three of you on different items on this. So I think we're pretty close. So just kind of wanted to check in with you and see if this is something you feel comfortable with adopting as far as how we conduct our business.
I had some nits, you know, some small stuff, if that's okay. And work sessions, I think the general public would think a work session is not a special meeting. So I think we should say there, this is a special meeting, and this is the way we do it. So they understand that all the Open Public Meeting Act's requirements apply to that. And then in that, we say no action is taken, but I should think we should add the word, unless that has been previously announced. Because it provides us an opportunity to take action before we have to wait for a regular meeting or call a special meeting. So if we have a workshop, and like we just said, that we may want to take action at one of these meetings. If we don't announce it, we don't have to take the action. But if we really need to take the action, if we can't do it at this meeting, then we'd have to call another special meeting to take that action. So I was looking for some words to that effect, that if we announce that we're going to take action at one of these workshops, it is a special meeting and we can do that. So those, I think that was kind of... and then there was one other thing, which I think is common sense, on teleconferencing. I think there was something at one meeting where there was a problem if everybody in attendance could not hear the microphone, because I remember coming up as an issue, and I don't know what context, but the communications have to be such that all the attendees can hear. So if Barb's back there, she should be able to hear it. And maybe that just doesn't need to be said, but that's just it had come up at one point. Oh, well, we can't hear what you're saying on the microphone. Maybe it was in the yacht club. So there's was a
I don't think we need to embed.
No, but that's just
But to address the action part, you could add to the end of the fourth line right after commissioners, where there's currently a period, unless action is previously noted. According to law.
Okay, good. That's all. So I think we do need an opportunity to make decisions between monthly meetings if the timing is necessary. So that's all I have.
So Carolyn, would you say that again, because I couldn't hear that very well?
There we go. There's that. to add words, unless the action is previously noticed according to law.
And that would be where that you were inserting that, in which paragraph?
Well, we're originally going to have it. I think it should go right at the end of the sentence. These sessions are for the board's discussion only. No decisions will be made, nor any action taken, comma, unless the action is previously noticed.
I see. I think I see special meetings and work sessions as two different types of animal, and that if we announce an agenda and an intent or anticipate at a decision like we did a couple of weeks ago, we call it a special meeting. If we're just getting together for our weekly briefing and discussion, then it's a work session.
Correct. You're technically correct, but here in your definition of work session, you're calling out your 9 o'clock Tuesday meetings, so we may as well.
Just a question. Under the law, they're a special meeting. Right? A work session, we only have two types of meetings, regular, special, and emergency under the law.
That's true.
So this is in effect, has to meet all the OPM requirements of a special meeting. Right?
Exactly. And in fact, there's really no defined term as a work session, but that's how you're using it. And because you've been so regular in this, at one point, and you've already published an agenda or a yearly calendar, right, that indicates all these, that they should be considered regular meetings at this point. They're a regular meeting, but they are a work session type of regular meeting.
So we have two types of regular meetings to note technically. Does that have to be, I think we talked about before, whether we have to notify the auditor of our regular meeting date and time?
The state register.
State register, yeah. Would that mean that if we were to comply with that, we should list both of those as our regular meeting times, or are we okay the way we are?
I think you're okay to call it out as a work session. It's still a regular meeting. Mm-hmm. We're just using it in a different format.
And then under the OPMA, as far as requirements for notice of those meetings, the calendar that is published and then updated as needed will serve as a notice to the public and the press, or does that need to go to the press as well every week so that we, as far as notice requirements for work sessions?
I think it's good practice to send your agenda to the press all the time, even for regular meetings.
So the work sessions, we've typically not published or even had a formal agenda.
Right. There has been no agenda, nor have there been minutes taken at work sessions.
Right. And that's the minutes aren't troublesome.
Okay.
But you've sent out notices.
We have notices that there will be work sessions and no agenda.
Right. And that's because there's no final action.
Right.
Of course, if it turns into you're going to have final action, that's when you do the agenda and make sure.
Right. It defaults as a special meeting and the guidelines under there. Okay.
So we're still not really able to have, and I'm not saying we should be able to, I just want to clarify that at a work session, if we say, we're ready to act on this, we still can't do it at that moment.
Unless we've announced.
Unless you've already
announced.
4-hour notice. Yeah.
Okay. But that means that we have to have sent an agenda, essentially, to wherever.
Yeah. You post and publish the agenda at least 24 hours before the meeting. And really, it comes about,
they technically are a regular meeting, but because you described it as no action being taken, if you are taking action, that's what would make it special and deviate from your normal practice, and so that's why you'd send out the notice ahead of time, so that the public has an expectation.
It's reaching back in a busy attic here. I recall that when you had a regular meeting and you have to cancel, you have to do it the next working day. Unless it occurs on the next working day is on a holiday, and then it has to continue on Tuesday. There was something back in there that constrained you on regular meeting cancellations and shifting. And I wouldn't want that to kick in, but I would have to do a lot of research to figure out where that came from.
What it might be referring to is if you want to keep it as a category of as a regular meeting. But let me check on that.
Yes.
Because
I
if you're canceling your meeting, the better part of valor would be to just notice your next meeting as a special meeting. Unless at some boards of you in the beginning of the year, they know some meetings are going to conflict with WPPA, and so they adopt a calendar at the beginning of the year and say, this will now be our regular meeting.
I just want to be compliant, but not kick in any requirements that would...
That
aren't, exactly. So just at one point that would come up. And
might it be clearer to basically say, anytime we have a meeting, it is a meeting. That is subject to all of the OPMA notifications and so on and so forth. And there are categories of meetings that have to do with how we've structured them as opposed to what they formally are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because this, as I'm listening, I'm thinking I wouldn't know this if I was a public looking and figuring out what we were supposed to have told them ahead of time.
Mm. Okay, all your meetings are subject to open.
Right.
That's a given. And sounds on point on all that. So you're wanting to make it clear in your policies.
Yeah, that
all
when we talk about meetings, maybe there's just a little introduction that says all meetings of the Port Commission are, in fact,
open public
real.
Meetings that satisfy the requirements.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons to have this work session is to tell the public we're meeting on Tuesdays, and it's just to chew the fat.
Right.
We're not really trying to change the world at these meetings. We're going to change the world at the big meetings.
Right.
And just so the public's informed.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really the intent of, perhaps, of having work sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's how we've used them. I think that's what we all, I think that's what we all expected. I'm surprised at the idea that we could use, without turning it into a special meeting noticed with an agenda, that we could take an action. And that's what I'm trying to reconcile, what the expectation would be.
Yeah, and because you are using your work sessions as a no action, the recommendation is that if you were to ever take action, you would in fact notice it as if it were a special meeting for exactly that reason.
Okay.
Because... you're right, it's all about meeting the public's expectation.
Yeah.
And if they have been told these are for discussion only, then you need to let them know that this is special because you're going to take action.
So Jim and Sam need to be alert to the fact they're the ones that have to predict, essentially, we're going to have action. We think there might be action and special notice. And then...
Yeah, and they've been... Sam has been
but we aren't going to, at a work session, spontaneously say, oh, let's take action,
correct.
Even though we have to.
That's what Jim would say. You can't.
Don't go there.
Okay, I just wanted to get a clarification on that.
So, Sam, do you have direction from Carol on how to change this document to reflect?
Yes. So, what we are going to do is under the paragraph for work sessions, line item, let's see, it's sentence number 1, 2, 3, 4, sentence number 5, after the words, nor any action taken, we will be adding comma, unless the action is previously noticed according to law.
There has been a recommendation that we add the language to the meetings section that all meetings are open, public meetings, and are subject to the requirements of the Open Public Meetings Act, so that will be added. Perfect. Do I have it? Perfect. Okay. There we go.
I only had one other point that I wanted to bring out, and that is at the bottom of the second page under Board and Staff Communications, the very last paragraph, where it says the Executive Director should be the point of contact for Port Legal Counsel. I'd just like to clarify there that this does not preclude individual directors from contacting the legal counsel. The Executive Director is going to be the primary point of contact, mm-hmm. but that does not mean that commissioners can't contact legal counsel.
So how does that actually work? I call Carolyn, blah, 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 ask four questions, mm-hmm. I'm satisfied. Am I then needing to report that conversation so you're aware of it, or so that we're all aware of it, or basically I can call you? I mean, primary
I'll
point.
I'll take a stab at that and then yeah. Jim or anybody else can come. It would depend upon the nature of the communication, but if it's anything dealing that affects board-wide or commission-wide, then you know we always default to the rule that no surprises and that all board members should have the same information as other board members. And so that would usually take the form of either Jim or I sending out an email to all, just informing. Unless it was something very specific about a particular commissioner's role or question, you know, there's exceptions.
There's no expectation of confidentiality between the clients, right?
Exactly.
There's no expectation of confidentiality when you're representing joint clients.
Yeah.
That's a sticky wicket there.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful because you have to be able to share that information.
Yeah. That's the typical interview question. To whom is the duty owed? You know, to the public, to the commission as a whole, to the board, executive director. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that I would say that 90% of the communication is going to go through Jim. And in most cases, if one of us has a question about something, it's probably best practice if we maybe talk to Jim and ask him to go over with Carolyn, and then we get the feedback that we all need as necessary. I'm only thinking of some extraordinary circumstance where, for one reason or another, a commissioner feels I need guidance on this and I don't want to make it a big issue or alert other people to it, but this is just something I need guidance on.
And that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jim has been spending an awful lot of money these days. And I noticed the new car in it. Well, I mean, it could be something like that. Or complaint or something like that. This was, I think this was an artifact of a previous contract where the intent was the board to try to keep the legal costs down and didn't want every commissioner asking the attorney a lot of different questions that could all be focused through the director, so we didn't end up running up a lot of hours that were not necessary. So that is my understanding of one of the origins of this.
Trying to hit the balance, the sweet spot there between keeping the cost down and making sure that the commissioners, when an extraordinary situation arises, that we don't have to, you know, wait and go through
sure. Jail. I totally get it. It's a good idea. So you've got the change.
So would you prefer that we make those edits and bring them back to you to the next meeting, or would you like to approve it based on the minutes or the actions you've asked for?
Is there any other?
I'm
good with it, what I've heard here.
Yeah, I can. I would move then that we approve this policy for the conduct of port conduct of business, subject to the amendments as discussed and read back to us today.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I do have one question, one clarifying question that doesn't affect the adoption of this. And that is that early on in my tenure, I had some questions, role questions, that I asked you about.
Those fall into the exception.
Okay. All right. So, that puts us at Executive Director Report.
Well, quickly, I've given it to you in written form, and you've probably read it, but our covered mortgage project has been delayed about a month because of the burnout panels. We've had to make some special orders. They have been ordered, due to arrive in the next 2 weeks, and that project, although we're about 30 days behind schedule, I think we can make up some time once we actually start working. The office plans, we're still waiting for county permits. They did get back to us in the 22 days with about 20 questions. So now it goes back to the county for another 22-day review, but we're working on that. Our architect's been great at addressing those issues. Washington Park, the county and the port continue to talk. We had a meeting scheduled for tomorrow, and it got moved. So we're hoping to have another site visit of Washington Park and that project, how it's going to interface with the engineers in the next week or two. I think the curb grant, I think we can all agree we had some successful meetings and we started the discussion with the public. I think that's good. I'm planning on calling our consultants tomorrow and giving them feedback on what we talked about with the commission. And so that will be happening this week. The stakeholders group, I'm the presiding chair. I guess I missed the last meeting, so I'm in charge this week. So if there's anything on the agenda that you all might want, right now we have the introduction of the new doctors coming to Kingston, and we also have a update from Sunny on residential units being planned in the Kingston community next year. And I believe, well, you were going to...
I can send it to you. Do you want me to wait till after Sunny does it, or I also can send it to you when I get home? Okay.
We're also going to talk about ferries, I think, and 104 issues.
Okay, that's good to know. Huh?
You want to put that on the agenda?
I'm trying to trace down. Yeah, I would be glad. I'm waiting for a call back from Rob Gelder on this. But the question is, do we reconvene a State Route 104 working group to address the traffic issues on the holding lot management? So I think I'll be ready to do that, pending getting some calls back from Ferries and them. But it's a very short topic. It's, hey, we're going to go and do it. Yeah.
And last and final is we're in permitting for the tent. We're hoping to get the tent installed the first week of May. Hopefully for opening day, we'll be ready for the opening day celebration. They're looking to do some kids things, and it'd be great to be able to do those kids educational things in the tent. So we're working on getting that up by May 1. That's all I have.
Will you let us know, let me know if it's not going to be up by the first Saturday in May? Because Martin is doing programs for the tent every month.
Okay.
Any other questions of Jim?
Not on your list, but status of getting a contract to repair the launch ramp.
So we actually hired a contractor. I need to bring you a contract for that. They will be starting hopefully in the next 2 months. So right now we're in the middle of fishing season. So we want to wait
until mid-April
until fishing season's over before we pull those floats. But the contractor we have hired said that he thinks he can work around. They won't have a center float, but they'll be able to launch and jump in their boat if they want to.
Okay.
We'll keep that clear.
Thank you.
Anything else, please?
Did you said you were meeting with Chris Placentia. Can you just give us a real
sure.
brief?
Sure. I had a great meeting with the tribes yesterday, or a member that works at the tribal offices. He is very encouraged. He sees a lot of synergy in how the port can work together with the tribe on this issue. And he would like to take the next step and bring the tribal chair Jeremy Sullivan named to a meeting. So we're moving it forward slowly, but he was very encouraging. And one of the things that came up in the meeting, which was really exciting, is I was talking about fishing and how we can possibly get fresh fish sold. And he said, one of the issues is we don't have any storage, and fish are perishable, so they tend to go away. And I suggested maybe the port would be interested in partnering with the tribes on a cold storage facility that the entire community could use for not only fish, but also for produce. So to start that discussion, I think it'd be really fun to partner with the tribes and coming up with a facility, and we're right on the main highway, going right to the ferry on the other side, and we could, it could be a great economic driver in the community if we could think about a cold storage facility. So
that's great.
And then Cynthia already, her ears have perked up, I can see, for a bond for a cold storage facility.
Revenue bond.
So, anyway, a lot of exciting things. And that's, USDA funds a lot of that stuff, so certainly USDA might be a great possibility for some grant money. More to follow, but one of the things he said is they like to be very formal, and they would like a whole outline of what we're proposing. And what I'd like to do is get possibly Kevin on board to help me and put that together so that he can put something in front of Jeremy to say, this is what the port is proposing. Good meeting, all in all.
I really like what you're saying there, and I hope you pass that on to Heartland. I keep remembering that brief, I think it was Port of Peninsula, that showed us their ice house and how it was. That's a really small port. I mean, that's no bigger than us, and they had built a facility there that seemed to be exact, a lot like what you were talking about. And it was just an ice house, but it kind of seems small ports can do this. So I kind of like that idea of working jobs as opposed to other things. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Commissioner report?
Oh, okay. Rotary said put the call out to get people to put up a tent on the 7th. Just hot off the presses there. Nobody groaned. It's usually weather dependent, though.
The 7th.
May 7th, put up a tent. First Sunday.
Our tent?
Yeah, Rotary does that.
Okay, so May 6th, it won't be up.
And that's, that's the first Sunday.
I know. We talked about actually doing it the last Sunday in April. So I met with...
They put the call out for May 7th.
Today?
Yes, just now.
Okay.
So just check with him. Right. That's the first Sunday. So that's the way he announced it. And then, what date is that? Well, that's May 7th.
Okay.
Because that's the first Sunday.
Isn't the first, I guess?
No. Okay. I looked at my little phone. And
yeah.
So, you need to circle back then.
Yeah, I'll circle.
Because there may be a conflict the week before. Things start getting tight on getting volunteers to do that. I was asked, the electric sign meeting didn't happen. Not enough people showed up. But they are looking for an institutional sponsor for the electricity, which is $20 a month. But they need someone who can sign with Puget Power and be a pass-through for the payments. And just, can you talk to, I can get you the point of contact to see if that's something we might be interested in. All you need, someone who's willing to sign the contract. They'll take the power off the adjacent light pole, and it's a nominal charge, and it would just be, they need someone they can actually sign with Puget Power.
Puget Power is not willing to donate that for the good of the community, huh?
I don't know there. John is probably. And I lied, the ordinance, the critical areas ordinance is going to have a public meeting. It's tomorrow, 4 to 6:30. I don't know if it's a poster session or whether they're actually going to talk about it. Originally, they advertised, if you go to the website, it says we're having an online open house. But there was a press release that came out about a week ago that said they were actually going to do something here on Thursday at 4 to 6:30. So that's right after Ron's meeting, I think.
But his meeting was like 11 or something.
Oh, okay. Well, tomorrow. Anyway, I lied, so I'm confessing. I think Sam's announced it. But I don't know the nature. There is a press release out there. Maybe you can find it. That's all I got.
Okay.
No, I don't think I have anything to report this month.
Nor do I. Okay, so any other staff comments at this point?
So I meant to pass this out when we did the finances. I'm going to attach the next one to it, so that way it's easier for everybody to see. This is that percentage of the budget that we're using so far. Actually, it's all one percent. So the rate this month, anything for income above 16.64%, of course, is good. For expenses, anything below that is good. And like you stated previously, looking at the financial reports and the expenses, the salaries was under, shows it there on the percentages.
Budget is the year budget, right?
Yes.
So should be 12% should be about the nominal.
Or
1/6 of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The equipment rental?
Equipment rental was the, we didn't do this following year, so it was the intent and the heater that we used during this was the Kings and Greys. The increase that was in the category.
I get why these and publications is stacked up in the beginning of the year because you're starting things, but electricity and phone doesn't seem like it should stack, so the base rates are up.
That one, I'm assuming, is due to cold weather. Some of our tenants have heaters that kick on when it hits a certain degree. It wasn't as cold last year as it was this year. And then the phone is going to the internet. So we have something I'm going to be looking into hopefully this month. We still have CenturyLink and Comcast, our new phone service next level. And now we have the Verizon payment also that goes in that category. So hopefully I can figure out Comcast and CenturyLink. They're almost the same thing. I don't know why we have two. I know one of them goes to the field op and we need it, so probably why it's two separate ones, but if we can combine it, one company, one bill, hopefully we can separate these.
So the Diamond Park variance is because we're not doing a park project. So we probably need to make an adjustment to our budget when you do your reconciliation. And we're, that's not going to happen this year type of thing. Yeah.
Next spring.
Yeah.
And Diamond's very happy to stay out there.
Okay.
Cost or class cost sheets that we do every month. that's Christmas lights, for example.
That's Parks and Grounds, right? So what we said, I mean,
yes.
If it's like the kiosk in front, that's stuff that's not on the water, basically, right?
Correct. And
so
North Beach.
Even though some things aren't, quote unquote, we really don't have a dog park, but.
Yeah.
Okay. It's what Ray runs.
And do you see a decrease in hours because we don't have Marvin, our seasonal help, for February? And if you look at the expenses part of the class, well, it's pretty good. I know you probably noticed the negative $26.36 on the office supplies, and that's only because we charged certain tenants certified letters, and when they paid it, it got reimbursed back into the account.
Just on this breakdown, how do you track work on the buildings? Is that under admin? It's not a park, it's not grounds, but if you were a place to do, you know, structural work, do we have a category for that?
I've been doing buildings as a marina. It depends what the building is. Our office is put it in as a marina, because that's where most of the marina work is. Downstairs is a marina restroom for all of our tenants and guests.
Can we have a buildings category, at least look into that, so we can track what's on the water and what's not on the water in terms of structural facilities? Because we are talking about building a major change to our offices, you know. Yeah.
So I'm keeping a separate spreadsheet for projects.
Well, maybe we'll just do that some other time. Talk about that some other time. Yeah. Maybe I need a little better understanding there. But I was kind of thinking about when you paint the building, or when we talked about doing the roof in the yacht club. I guess that's lease, but there is structural stuff we do that's, you know, whatever. Okay.
And that is auditory work.
So I did report yesterday that Juanita and I are going to be meeting with NMTA's insurance provider. So we'll have more about that next week to see how that moves forward.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Nope.
Okay. Sam, did you have a report you wanted to make?
I have really not much to report this time around. And currently, we only have one open public records request, and we are receiving installments. So. At the end of the agenda packets that everyone was presented with, you'll see a calendar for the activities for April this year. Let's see. Commissioner McIntyre, you are not going to be in town. April 17th, 16th, something like that?
I'll be here then. I'm not leaving until after our April meeting.
After the April meeting. Got it. Okay. And I recall you mentioning that you will be back for, will you be going to the PPA?
Yeah.
Okay. And Commissioner McClure, will you be attending the WPPA in Creole?
And what day?
Let's see, that is May. I left that back at the office. I can contact you with the exact dates.
That would be great.
That's that spring.
Can I track with you that I will not be in town on from April 7th afternoon through the 14th.
Very good. Thank you.
Mary, the WPPA in Clay Elum starts this May 17th, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 17th.
Great. And I also wanted to note that on Wednesday, it's actually April 26th, not 22nd, the Village Green breakfast. And the speakers are Carrie Bozeman and Adam someone, whose name I can't think of, but I'll give you that. And the timing is registration and coffee is 7 to 7:30,
okay.
And the breakfast is through 8:30, and out the door at 8:30. And I'll get you Adam Cornett.
Adam Cornell?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
So, is there anyone else in public that has moved to speak at this time? So, I guess we recess for executive session. It is 2:45.
And we will make no decisions after this executive session.
Sure.
For 15 minutes.
Thank you.
We can have a signing party when we're all done.
When you're all done, you're going to have a signing party? Who's going to be in charge of collecting the signatures?
Yes, I am.
That's why he gets those big bucks.
And so then you know what we need.
Now, when this is that means there's three of us. So the next room, the end of the 10, just single one, but I think times three.
Okay,
that sounds good.
Yellow.
I'll take this back.
I think it was a little wishy-washy.